Brought to you by Black Knight. It's the Tech Heroes podcast from technology.ie for Monday, January 16th, 2012. Dias Maria Vagas Kith Fulcher Oivishtak. Hello and welcome to technology.ie. My name is Conor Muinichon. Normally, Michaela Nealon is with me on the show, but unfortunately, due to other commitments, he doesn't make an appearance on this episode. The other thing that's different is that this show normally appears in or around the Thursday. So, what are we doing on a Monday? And what's all this about tech heroes? Well, as we mentioned on the show last week, Michaela and I have taken on board the feedback we've gotten about the podcast, along with our own impressions of the first few months, and we've decided to make a few changes. Basically, we're making it lighter and looser, and while recognizing that we've both got a lot to say, we've decided to break it up into shorter and more frequent podcasts. One aspect of the show that we've especially enjoyed over the last few months has been the weekly interview with an invited guest, and we're going to continue to feature that and give it pride of place in a podcast release of its own every Monday. We're starting this week with Bandon blogger, software developer and entrepreneur Conor O'Neill.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
I never quite know how to describe you, Conor, because you have various ventures going at one particular time. People would know you, I think, from Louder Voice. You do software development. You've started up at least one business.
At least one over the years, yes.
And you're, of course, a prolific blogger and things like that. Do you blog as much as you used to?
No, and it's kind of a disappointment for me that I don't do it as much as I used to. I've been trying to do the tech one more by making it more lightweight. So the idea of, you know, no post should take longer than 5 minutes to write. I've been trying to do that, and that's helped. But there was an awful patch there where there was basically nothing being written anywhere. And frustrated by it. But, you know, just...
Well, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. On behalf of neglectful bloggers everywhere, I absolve you, Conor.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. And of course, Twitter, we're all busy nattering away on Twitter. And it's sort of replaced our blogging muscles a little bit, hasn't it?
It has. And so, you know, if what I try and do is that the throwaway stuff goes on Twitter, but if you want it to last in any way, I try and make at least a 3 or 4 line blog post out of it so it has some sort of permanence. But I've also started using, because I suppose been concerned a little bit recently with the Twitter side of things where, you know, you can only go back 3,000 tweets in any case on your own tweets. And for someone like me who's been at it since 2007 and there's got 30,000 tweets there, that's, you know, I suppose it's a little bit of history, however useful it is, disappearing. So I've started using Gina Trapani's ThinkUp application, which is basically backing up all my tweets, all my Facebook updates and so on, onto, you know, a permanent site as such. So at least I have some sort of history of stuff that's there. Because, it, you know, we do all of this, and when we blog, we know it's going to be around for however long we can afford to do hosting. But with Facebook and Twitter, you know, it could go the way of GeoCities. So Exactly. Everything you write may be gone.
I heard GeoCities, when it all came down to it, amounted to less than 500 megs or something like that.
I think it was a hard disk's worth. Yeah, it's depressing that they felt the need to destroy our cultural heritage on the internet.
I imagine somebody's got it. Archive.org or somebody had backed it up. I mean, as you say, it's just a hard disk worth.
Yeah, hopefully they have, because, you know, whilst it people may think it's trivial, for example, my 10-year college reunion was on there with all the photographs and chat and all of that, and it'd be, you know, it wouldn't be good to lose stuff like that.
No, absolutely, and we can look back and see how web design was truly awful in the 1990s.
With the animated GIFs and the automatically playing music. Yes,
blinking text and things like that. Of course, we're all much, much further beyond that now. Conor, I want to. We've asked you on the show this week, and as I said to you earlier, I've been trying to track you down for several months. You've been working extremely hard in 2011. We'll ask you a little bit more about what you're doing later, but I'm delighted that we got the chance to talk to you this week, because turned on my Twitter, as I do, on a Monday morning to discover that Netflix had launched in Ireland. Had you known about this in advance?
Well, I knew that I'd seen the announcement a while back, so back in kind of November, December, that they were coming. But, you know, I'd put it in the whenever kind of category and forgotten about it. And then I saw a few people mentioning it on the Sunday, and then, you know, suddenly it appeared. It was there. I was the same, you know, logged on Monday morning, and there it was.
Generated a lot of excitement on Monday morning.
It really did. I mean, I saw that. We weren't just tweeting about it, but people were tweeting about the fact that we were all tweeting about it.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. You know, it is a big deal. We tend to suffer very badly here from the whole rights problems of whether it's iTunes or any of the other sort of online video operations, that the amount of stuff that they can provide to us is minuscule. So to see that, you know, Netflix, the thing that everybody in the States uses, the thing that uses up 30% of internet bandwidth at night, is now available here, you know, it's understandable that we were excited.
Yes, and that excitement quickly turned to disappointment and disillusionment by a lot of people after that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we, you know, we all had it built up in our heads. We were going to have, you know, last night's Simpsons and last night's Californication there waiting for us the following morning. You know, it's going to be a while before we get to that point. The initial catalogue was very small. They've said it'll at least double within the next 12 months, which is good. It's not a replacement for... you know, if you're and they've even said it themselves, Retasting said it themselves, you know, if you're Sky Atlantic and you're getting shows like Boardwalk Empire within a week on Sky Atlantic, you're not going to see that sort of stuff there. But that's not to say it doesn't have value. I think it's not what we expected. I think that's where the disappointment came from.
Now, you blogged about this, as did I, and as did Michaela as well, over there, and many people have, it has, I think, encouraged us to return to our blogs and express ourselves in more than 140 characters, Connor. But and I saw you saying that, you know, you're someone who has cut the cord, as you put it yourself, initially, and as indeed I've done recently as well. You said you couldn't stomach giving that much money to Rupert Murdoch for a stranglehold on your home entertainment, which is what Sky Plus represents to you.
Yeah, we realized, I suppose, at the start of 2011 that we were giving them about €75 a month, and for stuff we just did not watch.
That's
so,
the
you
thing.
Know, it fundamentally boiled down to we were not watching 99.99% of the stuff. So what we did was we cut back and got it down to about €55 a month.
Yeah.
That's okay. The kids like Disney and Disney XD and Boomerang and all of that. That's fine. Get rid of the movies. But then we got to kind of August, September. What, you know, we're paying €55 a month so the kids can watch a few rubbish cartoons, really, fundamentally, because we're not watching very much of it at all. So we bit the bullet and we shut it down, I think, around September 1st. We shut it down when we were on holidays, which is probably a good time to do it. and replaced it with a kind of combined Serview FreeSat box. It's not as good as Sky Plus. It definitely isn't. We've had to back it up with other kind of online download things like Amazon Unboxed and so on to get the kind of the US stuff that we like. But by and large, it's actually worked out very well. And, you know, that's €55 a month, €55 a month.
Saved,
exactly. And now the Netflix is here and they're giving the back catalogue stuff, because an awful lot of what we watch is actually quite old. You know, all those shows we want to catch up on, they have a lot of that stuff. So that's just, and that's, you know, we're talking $6.99 there. We're going, okay, you know, $6.99 for keep the kids happy. We get a bit of old stuff.
And here's the thing. It's actually, you know, for an adult looking at the catalogue, it might not be that good. But I posted on technology.ie the other day a photograph that I took of my kids 2 minutes after I visited Netflix.com. The sign up was that quick, of course, using Facebook and all of that. Whipped the credit card out of the pocket and signed up for a free trial for 30 days. And the next thing, my kids are watching SpongeBob and they're totally entranced. You may have looked at it in more detail. Is the kid selection a bit better, or is it just that there's enough there to keep them occupied for a while?
I think in general it is better. But there's quite a lot of stuff there. So, for example, I picked iCarly because that's one of my daughters likes iCarly. They had 25 episodes of that. The younger ones spotted Sonic, the Sonic cartoon, and there's tons of those.
Yeah.
So again, none of it's totally up to date. So for example, my daughter from Disney loved, our older daughter loved Wizards of Waverly Place and Shake It Up and all of these type of shows. They don't have those, but they have an awful lot of back catalogue, which the kids don't really realise is back catalogue. I mean, for example, ours have been watching a lot of old Sarah Jane adventures from the BBC recently, and they're getting, you know, they're 5-6 years old at this stage, but they're still fresh as far as the kids are concerned. So it's working out really well from that perspective.
Some people have pointed out as well that, and you alluded to it there as well at the start, Conor, that in many ways, while Ireland is not a huge market compared to the UK, we perhaps are in a position where we'll embrace Netflix more readily, and because we're basically even more starved than the Brits are when it comes to these kind of options. For example, Love Film isn't available here.
Ah, now I meant to check that because I noticed a lot of the UK posts about it over the past 48 hours kept mentioning the competition with Love Film. So I meant to check, could we get it? And okay, there, do you answer that for me?
I'm as far as I know that we can't, and that the general, I think, consensus has been at last there's something that we can use here in these countries. But what did you mention there in relation to Amazon? You mentioned an option there.
Is that a bit of a hack?
Oh,
that's a total hack. So I use a thing called Amazon Unbox. I think they've renamed it a few times. It's Amazon VOD in some situations. So, you know, I'm using VPNs and all of that to basically pay as if I'm in America and then do the download. So, you know, I'm still paying, but I have to jump all through all these hoops to spoof that I'm in the States. And that gets me access to the US TV shows that either aren't coming for months or will never be shown over here or, you know, are locked into particular networks. So, you know, my hope is that at some point all of that type of catalog becomes available to us here and we don't have to jump through those hoops. And I think the Netflix thing is step one in that progression. You know, I understand people's disappointment, but, you know, we've made a big jump. And if we can keep making those jumps, we get to the point where rights are for TV shows are just global and anybody can watch whatever they want as long as they're willing to hand over their credit card.
I was tweeting about this yesterday with somebody and I remarked that it does look like it really is a case of the studios not wanting to put their best stuff out into Netflix, not wanting to license anything but, you know, the back catalogue, as it were. They don't trust this kind of medium. They're afraid they're not going to get their money's worth for it. Have they got a point?
I don't think so, because I read an article this morning saying overall on the US side, media revenue is up in 2011. Mm-hmm. So after all the years of giving out about illegal downloads and all of that, overall, if you take both physical media and online media together, they're up. Now, they're down on physical media, absolutely. DVDs are dying, CDs are dying. Mm. But finally, the kick that they're getting from online streaming and online downloads and so on, legal stuff, is now enough to make up for that. So, you know, the numbers are now there. Like, the business model is now there that they can make it. And if you look at, I mean, when you think about something like, I mean, the example I always use is Top Chef, because that's a show I like to watch. It's a show that's not shown in Europe by and large. I mean, they may show kind of six-year-old episodes of it on some obscure Sky channel every once in a while, but that's a very popular show on Bravo. I'm willing to pay, and I do pay, Amazon $2.99 per episode to watch that. Now, if they're licensing that to some, you know, rubbish TV station on kind of Astra 1A or 2D, there is no way they're getting that level of revenue per user. Like, they're not getting that sort of revenue per user, but users like me who love that show are more than willing to pay that amount of money. So once they just crunch the numbers, but it's not the studios and the rights, you know, there's so many middlemen in this. There's a whole industry of people built around the buying and selling of media rights in different regions. And so
definitely
on. So
in the jostle and the struggle and the rearrangement, I suppose, and the disintermediation that's going to happen in relation to this, some of those middlemen are going to lose their footing.
oh, that's it. And it is disintermediation. And because, you know, any vested interest is going to do everything in their power to make sure it doesn't happen quickly. And that's totally understandable. But from a consumer's perspective, you know, we get it. We know that we want the concept, the old idea that you can somehow do a TV series in the US and then 6 months later show it in Europe. It's just gone. I mean, we know exactly what's happening because of Twitter and because of Facebook. We know exactly what's being shown and what's being broadcast, and we want that as soon as it's happening, wherever it's happening.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we now discovered that when you are watching things at the same pace and at the same release schedule as they are in the States, you then discover that there's all these breaks in series, which is very frustrating. I think people who've been following Fringe in particular on Sky in this country have seen the downside of being right up to date instead of running it all in one go. But that's, I suppose, another story. But, you know, talking about jostling for position and all of that, and talking about, I suppose, networks, or in particular, I suppose, studios and content producers seeing where the market is, we're not going to get the latest HBO programs, and we're not going to get the latest releases. We're not going to get them for $6.99 a month, are we? The price is going to have to go up.
No, absolutely not. I mean, all of those Showtime and HBO and Stars and so on are premium cable. Mm. So if we want them over here on the same schedule, we're going to have to pay someone. And it's not going to be at $6.99 a month for an entire package. Mm. It'll probably be per episode. You know, it'll be, and you know, it won't be $2.99, but it'll be some price per episode. Mm. And I'm not sure that's going to be Netflix. You know, that could be Amazon Video On Demand, which actually works extremely well from a delivery perspective. But Amazon are going to have to make that, you know, all of those deals to make sure that the rights are in place, both in the UK and in Ireland.
And of course, Netflix is aware of that too. If they want to move towards more premium programming, they are going to have to really, I suppose, up the prices. They tried to do that last year, and they tried to, in a way, sort of spin off, or perhaps the better word would be jettison the old DVD postal delivery business. And they got a bit of a backlash, didn't they?
Well, I hadn't realized just how bad it was until this week with some of the reports. I mean, they lost half their market cap, and they lost 800,000 subscribers, which is just shocking. For what wasn't, percentage wise, wasn't an enormous increase. But it seems like that split with DVD caused an awful lot of aggro, far more than I would have expected. So obviously, there's a very, very strong contingent of people who still just treat it as not a streaming service, but as a DVD delivery service.
So what are you using at the moment, Connor? What's your dream setup when it comes to home entertainment? And I asked this purely selfishly. I've blogged about this, as I said, last week. I wrote a blog post last week called Austerity Technology, and essentially my feeling on it is that austerity is fine and grand. We want to save money, but it gives us a great excuse, those of us who want to hack and play around with things and say, honestly, dear, this will save us money. That's why I'm up in the attic for the last 6 hours. And I know you're a kind of a tinkerer, and you're someone, for example, you've been using Boxy in the past. What's your setup like at the moment, or what's, in your view, the dream sort of home media center setup, Connor?
Well, unfortunately, because I live in the boonies, I don't have the dream setup, because when you've only 6 meg DSL, it remains a dream rather than reality. I'm a huge fan of kind of extending the life of old hardware and old software, or using new software to extend the life of old hardware. So, I mean, we have 2 old Xboxes, so not 360s, but actually old Xboxes, which are hacked and run Xbox Media Center, which is just a phenomenal piece of software. And that's used by the kids, and that's used by me in one of the other rooms. And they basically can play media from anywhere in the house, because they've got a network connection, a wired network connection. The main setup on the TV is actually just a really low-end self-built PC. So, you know, the cheapest motherboard and the cheapest AMD processor I could find on Dabs, and a 25 quid video card with HDMI out from amazon.co.uk. That runs, previously ran Ubuntu, runs Windows now, because the Amazon content that we like to play just the player doesn't run on Ubuntu, so we have to run Windows. That's just plugged into a TV, and then we have gigabit Ethernet throughout the house, and not done neatly. This is holes drilled through walls and cables tacked along doorways. But it gives us gig Ethernet everywhere with kind of NAS boxes with all the kind of the media on it. But basically, any physical media we get, we just rip it immediately so that it's available throughout the house.
I'd love to visit your house.
And then the kids, we have two old Wii's, and they were previously running M-Player, which is a media player piece of software, and that works fine. It's just it's not very intuitive. But as of Monday, they're running Netflix, and the kids, it's an absolutely perfect solution because they're used to using the Wii. They completely know how to use it. The Wiimote is ideal in terms of interface interaction, and we have it all locked down, so it's only kids' problems that they can see. So they're kind of instant converts of that. The only problem I run into now is that the old Xboxes can't run Netflix. So as of last night, I was playing around with a thing called Play On, which that runs on a Windows PC, connects to the internet, and then acts as a kind of a UPnP server for the Xbox. So basically, the Windows PC connects to Netflix, the Xbox connects to the PC, and then the PC streams Netflix to the Xbox. Unfortunately, and actually that's an issue I blogged about, and I don't think people have realized it, Netflix UK Ireland appears to be completely different or sufficiently different from Netflix US that most of the non-official apps don't work. So, in other words, the Netflix app for Windows Media Center doesn't work. The Netflix plugin for Xbox Media Center doesn't work. Basically, pretty much nothing works. You can browse the categories, but you can't actually view any of the content. So they've changed something, and kind of all the various kind of open source community guys are working away, and I assume we'll have a solution fairly quickly on it. But it's just a bit frustrating. And I saw Roku are launching their streaming boxes at the end of the month for UK and Ireland, and they'll support Netflix. So I have to wonder, is that delay because they have to change their code as well to get the streaming working?
Very interesting. Is Boxy still going, Connor?
The Boxy story, I blogged about it there recently, is kind of very depressing for me because I was such a fanboy, blogged about them loads, thought they were the future of TV. What's happened is, so when Boxy started off, it was a fork of XBMC and a beautiful fork. I mean, they did a really great job on the UI. They added kind of Twitter queuing, Facebook queuing, pulling in all your friends' favorite videos and so on. Really, really super app. And that ran on Ubuntu, Mac, and or Linux, Mac, and Windows. Then that wasn't really their business model, though. Their business model was to build software that they would license to consumer electronics manufacturers to build media players, which they did with D-Link and they did with iOmega. And as of about 3 weeks ago, they announced they're completely dropping all support for PC platforms and Mac platforms. So they're entirely now a software supplier to the likes of D-Link and so on. And unfortunately, you know, those boxes aren't particularly good. They're very, very low-end streaming boxes. They can just about do 1080p, but, you know, the UIs are laggy because they're running very low-end processors. So what was a really, really slick application on a PC platform is a middle-of-the-road application on dedicated kind of streaming hardware. So my feeling is, you know, I don't think they're really going anywhere. I'm kind of sad about the whole thing because I really thought they were onto something there. But and you know, you understand it. There wasn't money to be made releasing free software for PCs. But at the same time, if you're doing something on a dedicated platform, it just has to be so much better than everybody else if you're to make any dent. And unfortunately, they're not. And they tend to be very, very late with their software as well. You know, you look at the Boxy, the D-Link Boxy, about $199. And a Roku box is $49. And if all you want is Netflix and a bit of streaming, you're going to spend $49, you know?
It's one thing to have your media center PC or such as it is, and you're pulling in content from the internet and that. But again, there's the question of the channels and the TV and the what you can get from satellite and that as well. So you're using Serviu and Freesat, I think you were saying. Serviu is up and running now, isn't it? It is.
It absolutely is. It's been up and running for quite a while. I mean, the logic we used on getting a a dedicated box, as in a kind of a satellite box and a Serview box, was that it was only slightly more than 1 month's Sky subscription.
There you go. Yeah,
you know, it's a winner on that basis. So we've three setups here with interestingly kind of different results. The first thing we did was got this combo box, this Ferguson Arriva, which has caused us nonstop problems. We're getting there though, I think. So it does both. It does Serview and it does satellite. So basically, you just take the satellite cable out of the back of your Sky box and you stick it into the back of your Arriva, do a scan, and you have all the free-to-air satellite channels. So all of the UK stuff, BBC, all the BBCs, BBC HD, Channel 4 HD, Channel 5, and you know, the usual kind of rubbish that you never watch. But also Sky News is free-to-air, which I only realized recently. So you have that. Then you have Serview, which is RT1, 2, TV3, TGCar, a couple of plus ones, and then RT Junior, which is for kids, and a bunch of radio stations. And again, that's if you had any sort of half-decent analog TV signal, pull the aerial out of the back of the TV, stick it into the back of the Serview, and you've now got digital. Unfortunately, we weren't in that case. In that situation, our old aerial was dead, so I ended up getting a pretty decent aerial and stuck it in the attic, which was a bit stupid, but that works. So that gives us, that's one setup. It works brilliantly, generally. The recording on it isn't working well, and that's where my pain point is at the minute. We were also given another set. So that's €99. So that's, you know, that's very, very small. Then there was a Serview box we were given for review for free, and that's normally €49. And again, that works fantastically. It's a very small piece of kit, and we have that working in one of the other rooms. But the other thing I tried just as an experiment, and it's kind of pleasantly shocked me, is a PC setup. So literally onto eBay, search for kind of Serview. I think I just searched for Serview. So you can find these USB sticks that cost a tenner that can receive and decode Serview. So got one of those, stuck it into the back of the TV, or back into the back of the computer, into the back of the media center, and again plug the aerial into that, and you know, bang, I had all of the Serview channels there for a tenner.
Yeah, this is what I'm looking at now. I'm playing around with a PC now. It's a PC that does double duty in the office, and I still have work for it as well. But I've carried it up to the house, and I've been playing around with just doing the with seeing what I can pick up on it for a start, you know. But we're still on analog here, but that I'd certainly be interested in.
It gets better.
Yeah.
I should be a salesman.
Go ahead.
So then we were looking at the satellite, because the Arriva had been giving us grief. I grabbed just off Amazon, I think the company's TBS, so a pretty kind of generic Chinese DVB-S2 satellite receiver. For I think it was about £27, that plugged into, that's a PCI card rather than a PCI Express card. Plug that into the PC, plug the other, because obviously when you've got Sky Plus, you've got two satellite cables, so plug the other satellite cable into that, and suddenly had all the FreeSat stuff. But then the drawback, and it's a key drawback actually, and I think a lot of Sky Plus type people, or you know, people who, you know, who've used it over the years will kind of be frustrated with, is Serview gives you a week's worth of TV guide, a week's worth of EPG. FreeSat only gives you now and next, which can be very, very limiting if you're used to being able to kind of flick backwards and forwards and so on.
Now, Windows Media Center, I've been playing around with, gives you 14 days.
So this is what I was just about to say.
Yes.
The thing that blew me away was I was messing around and I didn't like the software that came with either the little USB stick or with the satellite card. They were just clunky and awkward. So I said, I wonder, does Media Center work? Loaded it up. I think I'd loaded Media Center up once before in my life.
Yeah.
Detected the two cards, scanned both of them, gave me all my stations, and then I suddenly discovered 14-day EPG. It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I don't think I think the number of people who know, A, that they've got Media Center even installed on their PC, and what it can do. I mean, it is truly, that is a solution. If you have a Windows PC for 37-odd euro plus package and posting, you can have Serview, satellite, and 14-day EPG. And the same, if you're a geek, you can use Mythbuntu, you can use Myth TV and XBMC to get the exact same setup, just a lot more configuration, obviously.
So there's a PCI card there's a PCI card for the FreeSat for the satellite. For the PC. Did you say a USB stick for the Serview?
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's PCI cards as well. There's PCI Express cards, and you can get combo cards with both.
Yes.
I think what people are missing, and what kind of the holy grail, but you start getting quite expensive then, is you have a card with two satellite ports on it and two DVB-T ports on it, so that you can play and record any mixture of, you know, you can be watching one thing and recording another in any kind of four combinations. I don't think they exist yet. But yeah, it's PCI Express, tiny little card for the satellite, and then this really cheap and nasty 10 euro USB stick for the Serview,
and that's converting an analog PC or an analog TV tuner card. It's working with that to get you the digital terrestrial TV channels.
No, the digital terrestrial is taking the digital signal off the aerial and just, you know, demuxing it. Now you do need some sort of.
This is a box. You take the analog TV, you take the TV aerial cable coax. You plug it into it, and then you USB that into the.
Into the USB. So it has a little kind of fly lead coming out of the side of the USB stick that plugs. You just plug your aerial into it. Now it comes with a little standalone aerial, but that's what you cities.
Fabulous.
When you're really pleasantly surprised with something, and it's both inexpensive and works well.
Okay.
So what I've been using that media center setup for a lot of recording, because like I've basically said, record Sherlock for the entire series, and that's I don't have to think about it again. And playback is beautiful on it. I mean, the whole Microsoft really hiding the light under a bushel for that one. It's super piece of software.
Connor, I have to thank you again for coming on the show with us, and I'm going to have to apologise to you in advance. You're not going to get away with just one appearance on the programme. We're going to have to get you back in a few weeks' time. And the other thing we're going to do is, because I've got to go away and try everything you've told me about and put it into practice, and the other thing we're going to do is throw it open and invite people. Tell us what you're using, listeners, to customise, hack and geek around with your home entertainment setup. I think there's never been such an opportunity to be in control of our own destinies when it comes to the TV remote as there is now. So do please share your thoughts, leave a comment on the blog at technology.ie, or you can get in touch with us on Twitter. You're on Twitter, Connor O, isn't it?
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, I'm Con, C-O-N-N, on Twitter. Michaela Nealon couldn't join us this week, unfortunately, which is a pity, because we had absolutely loads to talk about. He's just tweeted that we're flying solo on the podcast this week. We are, Michaela, and we missed you, but we'll hopefully have you back on the show next week on technology.ie. Connor, thanks a million. Anything you want to say or mention? Where can people, where's the best place to find you? Is it Twitter? Is it a particular website or blog?
Twitter is usually the fastest way. I mean, follow me, DM me, send me an at. I mean, I'm always on, so it's the speediest, faster than email even. So yeah, Conor O on Twitter.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about you and your success in 2012, Connor, and I will definitely be back to pick your brains on media centres and the like as well. Connor, thanks a million.
Thanks, Conor.